this week on the Inside Flap.
She suddenly leapt back in the dinghy and said, I saw a shark. And I said, oh, it's okay, sweetie. You know, you're in the boat now. You'll be fine. We'll just get your brothers. And she said, no, it's a white-tipped reef shark. And jumped back in the water.
You know, as a runner, I'm out running all the time. And we see, if I pass another runner, we wave, we nod, we smile. There's always an acknowledgement.
I mean, I kiss every walker.
you tongue.
We hug.
Yes, that's right.
We kiss.
Crap.
And then
you smack them on the butt.
I'm surprised
you don't do further. We don't go any further than that. Maybe some gentle caressing of the neck as we go by. But, you know, we're going too fast as we're running.
I braided a woman's hair this morning that I passed.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus. Welcome to the show. Seated across the table to my right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy. And on the other side of the table to my left, that's Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior.
Excelsior. Or welcome
not,
to
not to bring
episode.
Up business.
What's going on?
Okay, you sound good.
You're scowling.
I couldn't hear you. For whatever reason, the music was really loud.
I turned my mic up. So
okay, I can hear you now. I can always hear you.
We do put the capital P in professional. So
how did you get so blessed, Laura?
I don't know.
You can always Andrew? You're gonna hear me coming and going. No, we are not in the snack shack tonight. You know, it's winter time now.
I wonder if there's an audio quality.
So, a difference. We should, hey, hit us up at the Inside Flap. Let us know if for the last 5 years you've heard a difference between the snack shack when we record in the snack shack outside in the backyard.
Yesterday,
or when we record inside.
It was 89 degrees here in Littleton.
Sure was.
89. In October. And then today it was more seasonal. It was like 70-something.
Yeah, you've got a sweatshirt on right now. Yeah. I've got a long sleeve shirt. And Andrew's got long pants on.
And a sweater over there. Now, I will tell you, at 6:30 when I was driving to work this morning, I got my first freeze warning.
Oh, really?
It was 38 degrees, and I got the first freeze warning on the car.
Really? So,
yeah.
I feel like you just wanted to say you were driving into work at 6:30.
I feel the same way.
I know
I might feel the same way.
Wait, hold on. We interrupted Robert Justice.
Is he really that?
Thanks,
Dave,
Robert
Dave
Justice.
Dave beat you this morning.
I was at the Home Depot at 6 a.m. this morning.
Woo!
Yes. Had to get to listen to this. So they're having So yesterday I found out they're having an assembly in our auditorium. Now we are in the throes of setting up for Sweeney Todd, two-story revolving set.
Woo!
Plus all week long the choir has been in there rehearsing, so we've been unable to work on our set. Then I found out they're having an assembly today. So I had put down some plywood in the seating, and they were going to be dancing on it. The point is, I had to go drive. I had to get six pieces of plywood, half inch plywood, throw them in the back of my truck, drive up to school in the dark. Shout out to Riley who met me at school as we brought them into brought them into the auditorium. I screwed them in as she was rolling out black paint on them onto the stage, the dance, whatever they were going to do for this assembly. But I'm literally this morning at as the performers for the assembly are coming in early.
Wow.
I had our leaf blower on the
trying to dry the paint.
That I had just painted on the plywood.
Did you tell them that it was...
No, I was too embarrassed. I was too embarrassed.
Really?
Yeah. Because it should have been done the night before. This was, you know, their assembly. It's Hispanic Heritage Awareness Month. And here I am.
Did you know about it the night before? Is that why you were embarrassed?
It's been on the calendar
for quite some time.
Okay, let's say that.
That makes more sense.
Let's say that.
All right.
But because I'm in Sweeney Todd mode, it's not something that's on my radar.
I understand.
And also because the choir has been there all week rehearsing for their show. So, and there's been a lot going back and forth with that.
So maybe
it's been a delightful.
Yeah. Maybe because you're in Sweeney Todd mode, you decided to cut it a little close.
I should cut it close. That's right. There you go. Like that's the first time. Anyway, we have a great show for you today. This is episode 269 of The Inside Flap. We are joined by Rose Carlisle, who is author of the instant number one international bestseller, The Girl in the Mirror, which I had previously recommended on the podcast. She's got a new book out now. I really enjoyed it. It's called No One Will Know. Had a great chat with Rose, and we'll have that for you in just our first. I think that was our first. No, it's our second New Zealand author.
Yeah.
Our second New Zealand author. Yeah. But first, I did want to talk a little bit about a subset of humanity, a subculture, if you will, a group of people that I feel like they need to be called out a little bit based on a couple observations from a couple different incidents that have occurred over the last couple of months. Now, I'm a runner. You know, I've done a bunch of marathons. I love to run. I've run every day this week so far, which is great. Love to get out there. Love to go for a run in the park, out and about, seeing the sights. Yes, Andrew.
Are you going after the cyclists?
Wow, look at this guy. Yes, indeed.
That's an easy one.
High five there. Yeah.
Yeah, and you were actually there for one of that. Now, we've been going after these cyclists.
Well, for years.
For years. Ever since Laura and I were in Steamboat Springs with, how old was Sylvia when we were on that hike in Steamboat?
Like six.
Probably
years
six
old.
Or 7 years old. We're on a hike through the woods, a beautiful trail, and
not to put too fine a point, it was the beautiful brain.
Uh-oh. What's it? Brain
Crested Butte.
Crested Butte. Oh, that's it. Crested Butte. You're right.
Yeah. I was going to say Buena Vista, but then I remembered it weird.
Crested Butte. Going hiking up the trail, and we heard it. It was like the Doppler effect. We heard him before we saw him. Mm-hmm. Coming in hot. And this mountain biker flying down single track trail. We had to scurry off there. We didn't scurry. We bolted off the trail into this the high grass.
We had a dog
to make room for this guy. We had a dog with us as well. So that was
any of you have ever tried to get out of the way if you have a large dog or even a small dog?
Yeah.
They lean into the whatever it is.
Why do they do that?
I don't know. You pull them
immediately
away. Yeah. They lean with all their body weight in the direction that you don't want them to go.
They were leaning. That's what they love to do. So that was our first indoctrination to when we first moved out here to the world of cyclists. Well, Andrew, you had your buddy Kevin come out to visit a little while ago, and we were showing him around Red Rocks. We took a little hike around Red Rocks. And there's a segment of the hike where you can stay on the trail and it's fine, but I like to go on the road on this segment because you're right in, you got Red Rocks to your left, Red Rocks to your right. And we're hiking on there, we're walking along the road going down. And there's no traffic on this road. Right?
It's a road within the park, right?
Inside the park, yes.
Yeah.
We're going downhill and a bike comes around the curve and he's coming uphill. And as he passes, now, it's been well documented on the show. I don't have great hearing, right? I hear what I think is... Yeah, now you remember?
Yeah.
No. I hear what I think is, morning. So I say back to him, hey, good morning. And he cycles past me. As the cyclist goes out of our line of vision, Kevin, Andrew's buddy Kevin, turns to me and says, you know, that cyclist wasn't saying good morning to you. I'm like, what do you mean he wasn't saying good morning? He said, no, he didn't say morning. He said, move.
Oh.
Move.
Oh.
If you can imagine that, a guy out for a pleasurely cycle on his bike, meeting up with three other people out for a little stroll, says move. To us. No cars in the road. Yeah. Looks at me and says,
did you hear
move.
It, Andrew?
I didn't, but you know, But this guy definitely had 30 feet he could have gone.
Yeah, I'm right picturing it.
Plenty of road.
I know what the roads look like there.
Plenty of road.
It's a nice, smooth
cars
road.
In the road. Yeah, move.
So I have my issue with cyclists too, but it comes down to maybe two things. One is it the attitude of some cyclists, right? In that,
well, they own the road. Well, own the road. They pay the cyclist tax, I guess.
They own the road. They own the pedestrian walkway.
They own it all.
And they own everything. And right, and they feel like they're invincible. Mm-hmm. So that's one problem I have. The other problem I have is, you know, they decide to pick and choose if they are going to obey the laws of pedestrians.
I would agree with you on that.
Obey the laws of motor cars.
Of cars, so
for me, it's...
They do! Very selective.
That's it. But for me, it's a safety issue. Now, legally, if you're on a bike, you're supposed to obey the laws of...
You act like a car.
Motor vehicles. Right.
Yeah, you're supposed to act like a car.
I have looked it up because I've been in a situation where I was in a shouting match with a cyclist who decided to fly across a pedestrian walkway at 20-some miles an hour.
Wow.
And I almost hit the guy. Right? Wow. It's a pedestrian walkway. You don't fly across there at 20 miles an hour. He doesn't have a right to do that, at least not in Littleton. Boulder's a different story.
Oh, Boulder.
Boulder has different bike laws.
Really?
Because of the university, I bet.
Mm.
And so if you are in Boulder frequently, look up the bike laws because the bikes have more rights of way in the pedestrian zones.
Interesting.
Than they do anywhere else.
Well, Sylvia has a bike in Boulder,
yes.
And I know just from trying to walk down there, you have to pay attention to what is labeled bike on a sidewalk and what is labeled pedestrian. So it has to be with, it's a huge university.
It is, and a lot of kids bike up there.
A massive amount of kids on bikes. Mm-hmm. And it's most of those kids don't wear helmets, and they're on sidewalks.
You mean, and by most, you mean none. They're not wearing a helmet up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But they're not riding in the roads, they're riding on sidewalks.
Right. Well, then the problem that I have with, they're just not. So, you know, as a runner, I'm out running all the time, and if I pass another runner, we wave, we nod, we smile. There's always an acknowledgement.
I mean, I kiss every walker.
you tongue.
We hug.
Yes, that's right.
We kiss.
Crap.
And
you,
then
you
I
smack
mean,
them
I,
on the butt.
I'm surprised
yes, and
you don't do,
you do
further.
That. We don't go any further than that. Maybe some gentle caressing of the neck as we go by. But, you know, we're going too fast as we're running.
I braided
we're going
a woman's hair this morning that I passed by.
So we're out there running around, and that's what we do. So the other day, I went for a bike ride, and I feel like cyclists have different rules in engaging with other cyclists, even because it was up in Idaho Springs, but coming down that road, and as I'm getting back to Idaho Springs to cross the main thoroughfare there, where the parking area is, there's a red light, and I hit the red light, and as I'm coming up to the red light, I see another cyclist waiting at this red light. I said, "Oh, okay. I'm going to pull up next to this cyclist and, you know, acknowledge them."
Sure.
Because that's what we do as runners. I figured that's what other cyclists do to each other. Pull up next to her.
It was a woman.
It was a woman.
That's the first problem.
It was a woman.
You can't do that.
And
you
You
shouldn't do that.
Okay. So we're at a red light. I mean, there's only limited space. Like, I can't be in the road. I'm on, like, the shoulder
it's
to cross it.
It's creepy when men do that to women is all I'm going to tell you.
So I pull up. And when I say next to her, I'm not, like, right. I'm still 6 feet away from her.
I'm picturing you sidling right
maybe 3 feet. All right, probably 10 inches away from her. Pull up. And she looks over. And I just smile and wave. I give her a wave.
That's weird.
And as I'm doing it, I'm feeling awkward.
Yeah, it's weird.
Because I'm thinking about, well, if I'm a runner, we're going to acknowledge it. But now I don't know what to do as a cyclist.
So weird. I feel so embarrassed for you.
She lingers with her gaze at me.
She probably thought she knew you.
For a second. Maybe. But no, it was like a cold, hard linger. It was like a glare linger. It was a glinger. She glingered at me.
Okay.
And then, like, in her neck and torso just moved to the side as she looked away from me.
Ooh.
Without any acknowledgement whatsoever.
So
none.
Yeah.
And I felt immediately awful.
I would have
nodded. Well, clearly I have done something wrong.
I would have nodded
in the
and not smiled.
Maybe, probably, that would have been the way to go. Yeah.
So a lot of times that's what I would do with a cyclist or even a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Right? For safety reasons, I will look at them and basically go
Exactly. Yeah. Acknowledge them.
And I might even tap my eye that...
You see them.
I see.
Andrew's now holding the microphone 12 inches away.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of gesturing going on.
There's a lot of gesturing here at the table.
That? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think that's good.
That's probably the best way to go. I didn't know what to do.
Well, you don't do that. Now you know.
Now
you
I know what that. Not to do.
Yeah. I honestly think if it's a female, even a male, I think you don't do anything. If they look at you, you just nod.
Yeah. I guess so, because there are more cyclists
you
than runners
don't,
out here.
Did you show your teeth smile?
I probably. Oh, yeah, that's how I smile.
I know.
What am I going to do? Give
a nice little
smirk? That would look too much like a smirk. Yeah. Like that would be even worse, I feel like.
So weird.
I don't know. That's what you do. But I mean, that's what a runner, we would engage. Be like, hey, where'd you run to? How as we're waiting for the red light? Mm-hmm. You know. I don't know. It's complete. I think they're two completely different cultures, and I'm on the running side of it. Hmm. And forget about
join the walking club. We all have a great time.
It sounds like it. Sounds like babies are being made on this walking club. Oh, Laura, how has your week been?
Oh, it's been good.
Besides out there canoodling with the walkers up in the park.
Dave Medicus joined me at a job site this week.
That's right. I did. So much fun.
I have a job site that's really close to East High School.
Yeah.
It is a block away from Colfax.
And I didn't realize I drive right past this house single day on 14th.
So I got a fun job. I work with a developer sometimes who, works on these big apartment buildings, basically. And so this is a 1891 mansion.
Yeah, it is a mansion.
Was a mansion.
I got to go inside of this.
Yeah. And it's massive, massive. Like there's servant stairs in the back. Mm-hmm. They would have had servants living in the attic area up there. Like it's a beautiful, it was a beautiful old home.
Right.
And how many? It was converted to apartments a long time ago.
How many units is this going to?
Probably 2, 4, 6. I think probably about 6 or 7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And it's stunning. And the developer that I work with, he wants. When we do an exterior color scheme, someone painted over this brick a long time ago is what I'll say. Otherwise, yes, I agree. Hey, don't paint the brick.
Right.
It's already been painted. He wanted something that was eye-catching. He said, let's get weird with the exterior.
Hmm. Now, so, do you get, as a designer, you must get excited when you hear that.
I do
or
get
do
excited.
You get nervous?
I get both. I get excited, but then you also wonder, do they really mean that? Are they going to see it? And then I also think, do I even know how to do that anymore? Because I'm so used to being careful for my residential clients.
Okay.
So, people, if it's your own home, you don't take that much risk. In general, people don't.
Now, this is a house that's going to stand out on its own because it's so big.
It's massive.
And it's in it's right there on 14th.
It's on a big street.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had sent him multiple things and he said, nope, crazier. Wow. So he really pushed me.
Okay.
So I am slightly uncomfortable, Andrew, with the color scheme.
It's Fruit Loops colors. Stripes.
No, it's not. Well, there are going to be. Anyway.
Oh.
So Dave met me over there. I was supposed to meet. There's scaffolding all up over this building.
A lot of scaffolding.
And because it's a three-story
might even be four-story.
I think it might be four-story high.
I think you can call it a four-story building.
It's massive.
It's massive.
And
half a block big.
Yeah. Dave met and he was coming over there and it was Monday morning. First thing Monday morning, the painter named Miguel was supposed to meet us there at 10.
Right.
We get there to the job site and his crew are like, oh no, he just left. It's like, okay. And then Max, the developer, was telling me and Dave, as you found out when you first came, the house, someone had broken into the house over the weekend and had stripped all of the first floor of its electrical wiring.
Yeah.
Man.
And I was like, damn, Max, that sucks. He goes like, oh, happens all the time. I couldn't believe how nonchalant he was about it.
Was this old wiring or brand new
wiring?
Brand
new wiring.
Oh. New wiring. It's all new construction inside.
Well, it's been brought down to studs.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a fire.
That's true, yeah.
Did Max?
He was pointing out
there was
out
a fire in the attic.
No, started in the attic. Yeah.
Started in the attic, like maybe 10 years ago.
Right. Smoker in the attic.
There's a girl who lit a candle and left.
Hmm. Whoa!
She lit a candle,
really?
And then went out to dinner with her boyfriend. Hmm. And evidently, like, her drape caught it on fire because she left the window open, too.
Well, it's nothing like giving oxygen to a free-flowing flame.
Yeah. So that's kind of interesting. But, yeah, the thing about this building is if you – I'm not exaggerating. I don't think, Dave. If you stand outside of this building, let's let 5 minutes pass. You will see what I would call a tweaker walking past.
Yeah.
Someone who is addicted to drugs.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Massively.
Because you're one block away from Colfax.
And yeah, I used to think what happened on Colfax stays on Colfax.
Not anymore. They're coming into our school.
Yeah, they're coming into your school.
The productions of Red Ink.
So, like,
through the window.
It's no wonder that the house was stripped for metal. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so the house is going to get tagged is the other thing.
Oh.
Because it's right there. It's going to be painted... some interesting colors, but so then I had to, he's like, oh, okay, well, Miguel will meet you here Tuesday at 10.
Yeah.
I said, okay.
Yeah, sure.
I was there Tuesday at 10. And
I was there, that's the day, is that the, when I was there as well?
It was the day after you were there.
Oh, I was, you know. Mm-hmm.
Day after you were there.
Together.
And I asked his crew, who really did not speak much English. No. Oh, and as an aside, tell them what the name of the painting company is.
Yeah, and they have a lovely sign outside this mansion.
Ireland's Finest.
Ireland's Finest. Run by a guy named Miguel.
Huh.
With an all Spanish-speaking crew.
So where did that name come from?
We were trying to... If you can ever meet with Miguel, we'll find out.
Well, I know. And so I ask, like, Eduardo and this other guy, like, hey, is Miguel here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just left. Hmm. No, he's not here. And I'm thinking, what is going on? Yeah, and then so I let Max know, like, hey...
He's going out looking for some
potatoes.
He
didn't show. Yeah. And anyway, he texted me yesterday and he's like, hey, are you going to be there today? And I'm like, do you think I just drop by every day at 10?
Just for the hell of it.
What is going on?
Oh, man.
But I did finally meet up with Miguel today.
Oh, how is his Irish accent?
Beautiful.
Too thick?
Beautiful
to
Irish accent. Mm. No, he has literally no accent. I find this interesting. So he has zero accent. But then when he speaks to his painters, his Mexican painters, the guys that are working for him,
yeah.
He speaks beautiful
Spanish,
but no accent.
You need to find out why his painting company is called Ireland's
Finest. My thought is it's not his company. And he is one of the many, like, whatevers that work for them.
Or it was somebody else.
Oh, and he bought it.
Well, no, he took it over.
Could be.
Yeah,
I
worked
will
for
say,
the person. That guy retired. So he just basically stepped into their shoes.
There is a slightly racist graphic on the Ireland's Finest.
what is it? The drunken Irish fighting guy like the Notre Dame?
No, it's a leprechaun.
Yeah.
That's kneeling for some reason with like, it's an odd, you know, it's an odd logo.
I'll have to take a look at that sign.
Yeah, but the guys, they don't want to be up on those scaffolds. It's really high. I do not blame them. So they're starting at the top
high.
To get that top part done.
Get the top.
And they're going to...
When are they starting to paint?
They're starting tomorrow.
Oh, awesome.
So I can't wait to
run
see
past it.
I took a great photo of a guy way up there at the top that we could post. Yes,
great.
Andrew?
Four stories is nothing. When I was in Hong Kong...
That's probably true.
No. People would have scaffolding going up 60 stories out of bamboo.
Oh, a bamboo.
Yeah, bamboo scaffolding. I mean, just all the way up the side of a skyscraper.
Wow.
I mean, you know.
Man.
You're right. It isn't. We used to live in New York, so I definitely know that it's not.
Yeah.
But I'll pass this picture over to you, Andrew.
Are there colors in this?
No, it's the old colors with primer.
Sure, we'll paint these.
And there's a guy on the top left up there.
We'll post these at the Inside
Flap
we'll
post
on Facebook so you can check
and,
a look at
And as it comes along, we'll see it.
Yeah.
We have had violently negative reactions to some of the paint colors, which Max loves because he just wants, He wants a reaction.
Yep. Now, are those power lines that close to that scaffolding? I mean, I'd be more concerned about that than anything else.
You don't want those power lines too close to the metal scaffolding.
That's really funny. Yeah. You know what? That's a great question.
That's like when I had backed the travel lift into the power lines along Route 50 on Cannon Island and knocked off power to half the island.
Oh, that's really funny.
You don't
want
that. Yeah.
Yeah. So we shall see. We shall see.
All right.
Yeah. So I'll keep you posted. Andrew, how have you been? I know you're busy.
Yep.
Yeah. So
I actually think you are really busy right now.
It's valid. As a first year teacher,
Is he really that busy?
So let's see. Monday we had parent teacher conferences. So that was like 6 a.m. to like 8 p.m. at the school.
Yeah. And we have ours next week. So.
And it was interesting. My teacher, like, she's like, I want to move the table here. I want to move the table there. And I'm like, well, you're not trying to barricade the room, are you? And she's like, yes, I am. And so I'm like, don't you want the parents to come into the room? She's like, absolutely not.
Yeah, that's always a sign of a good teacher.
So we put two tables side by side so that the people could take two steps into the room, sit at a chair, and they couldn't actually come in the classroom.
She doesn't want them looking around.
That's weird.
Yeah. Well, and like, I'm just thinking.
But what's in there?
And it's just
a science classroom.
Yeah. And all I can say as a parent, I'm always interested in going in the room, seeing what's on the walls.
I love going in the room.
Sure,
like seeing what's around.
Yeah.
So that was my first parents' teacher conference. I had 12 parents. You know, most of them, their students are good students.
Yeah. That's the thing. You never get the parents of the kids you really need to talk to.
Well, and we had maybe one parent, a mom.
Mm-hmm.
A single mom who came in with her kid, right? And I'm not going to say names or anything like that.
No, I need. Oh, first I need, and we last need names. Social security numbers.
Birthday.
We need places of birth.
And so this her kid is trouble.
Oh.
And her kid,
with a capital T that rhymes with P.
Her kid was even arguing with the mother right there, like in the
giving her lip
in the parent teachers conference.
Oh. Yeah.
You know, so then you kind of saw what she's dealing with. And
well, I mean, and we're dealing with a similar thing in there. And you want to help the kids, but if their attitude is, I know everything, I've got nothing to learn. Mm-hmm. I don't have to listen to my mom. I don't have to listen to the teachers, you know, and honestly, you know, we're really just trying to help the students, you know, and
why would you do a silly thing like that?
Yeah. Well, I can tie up with the economics of it, of trying to help students. But we'll save that for another show.
We'll save that for the economics podcast.
So that was Monday.
Yeah.
Then let's see. I'm trying to think what happened on Tuesday was another late night.
You had your class on Tuesday.
Oh, that's right. I've got my seminar class till like 9 o'clock. So that's another like, you know, 6:30 a.m. to like 9 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yesterday, I was able to take it a little bit easier. But I had to come home and, you know, get the kids. And so Wednesday wasn't bad. Now, tonight, I had to leave school, drive 50-some minutes to pick Dashiell up from high school, grab a quick bite to eat, take him to the football game.
What was that bite to eat? What are Taco Bell, McDonald's, Burger King? What are we, Wendy's?
I'll
what
come
are we
back.
Talking about?
I'll come back. Oh. I'll come back to that.
I feel like they have a place. They go to.
Yeah.
Yep. No, this is different, but I'll come back to that.
Okay. Please.
So
were
anyways.
Were you at our high
back.
School?
Yeah, Littleton High School.
Littleton High School. Right down the road here.
Yeah. So, took him there. Basically, I waited. And I volunteered to help push equipment on and off the field at halftime.
Andrew.
Yeah, good for you.
Right? Because I'm doing it this weekend at a competition, so I figured...
It's practice.
Why not?
And you're not being judged. It's just for show.
Why not?
So, it's a good time to do it.
So, I did that. So, now, after that's over, I run into my car. I jump in my car. I drive over here. We are recording. Now, as soon as this is over, I've got to drive back to pick my... kid up at the football game.
You do.
That's right.
To basically go back home. So, you know, it's likely going to be 9:30, 10 o'clock before I see my bed tonight.
Wonder why they're playing on a Thursday night.
It's homecoming. And I mean, I don't know.
Huh.
You know.
Oh, but I bet the stadium was booked.
Yeah, I think there's only so many bookings of those stadiums.
In our area that we live in, there's one stadium that has lights. Yeah. And that happens to be our home high school.
So where do we eat?
Yes.
So part of it
circle
is
back.
I pick him up at 4:15. We've got maybe 40 minutes, 35 minutes to get a bite to eat. Don't feel like McDonald's. Want to eat something a little bit decent.
Sure.
But with traffic the way it is, Dash is like, well, let's go here. I'm like, well, there's tons of traffic there. We're not going that direction.
Which place did he want to go?
Well, he wanted to go to Culver's. But
sure. That's where you guys usually go.
Yeah, but not only are they slow, but we have to fight traffic to
I
get
know.
There.
It's a jog right
then
there.
Then we got to fight traffic
a lot of red lights.
On Broadway.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So... Anyways, we took Windermere down, and we went to Five Guys. Right?
Oh,
and
Great burgers at Five Guys.
There's no traffic. Bottomless fries. What a good idea.
So here's the problem. So I got a I got a single burger, right? So no cheese, no bacon. Because
Yeah. Well, how do you not get a
Hang on. It was like $7.69 for just the burger.
Wow.
Right? If you get bacon on that bad boy, it's like $9.69. If you want bacon and cheese on the burger, it's like $12 plus taxes.
Wow.
So anyways,
Five Guys is not cheap. No.
I haven't been to one. He got a double burger. And I'm like, "You sure you want the double burger?"
The problem is when you order a burger at Five Guys, that's the go-to. The go-to is that you have to request a single.
You have to say a single.
If you just say, "Give me a cheeseburger," the burger they give you is a double cheeseburger.
But the single with no cheese and no bacon
still
$7.
Like the size of a McDonald's cheeseburger. Like the size of
They're that small?
They're like the size of a quarter pounder.
Quarter pounder. Okay.
And that, a double, yes.
No. Like a regular quarter pounder. Single patty.
Yeah, a little less. Okay. Somewhere in between a single and a double.
So I got the single because I don't necessarily need, and I'm trying to like be careful with money. Mm-hmm. So I get the single. We share a fry. Dash orders the burger. He says, "Well, I'll take the little bacon burger or the bacon burger."
It's like $20.
And so, of course, she automatically brings up the most expensive damn thing on the menu, right? And I'm like, "Dash, do you want the single or do you want the double?" He's like, "No, I'll take the double." And he's a growing
boy. He's hungry.
Yeah, yeah. So it's fine.
What's he's 15, 16 now? 15. Yep.
So anyways, so we get a small fry. We get the two burgers.
Yes.
We get two milkshakes. Now, how much do you
think this costs? First of all, their milkshakes are over $10 a piece.
They're not $10 each.
They're a lot.
No. But in any event.
Sylvia would always get a milkshake when we got there. Yeah.
It was like $47.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, and I'm sitting there.
You might as well have gone to Cherry Cricket.
If we'd have had time, we would have gone to Cherry Cricket. And I'll say is like, if Five Guys gets to the point where they're pricing it to where you might as well go to
a sit-down restaurant.
A sit-down restaurant, which has over-the-top cheeseburgers. Mm-hmm. And if we'd have had more time, that's where we would have gone. But, you know, when it comes to inflation and the cost of things, like, that's the reason I wanted to come back to that is
$40-some
for two simple burgers.
For two people. Yeah.
Sharing a thing of fries.
You know, Five Guys is not cheap.
Now, we probably still would have spent $20-some to get the same thing from McDonald's. McDonald's isn't cheap anymore either.
Or you
either.
Could have gone next door to Jersey Mike's, got yourself some little subs, a little cheesesteak action.
Yeah, that's just not...
For a lot less.
Dashiell's not... that's
no fries at Jersey Mike's either.
Yeah. And probably no shakes.
So anyways,
definitely no shakes.
So speaking of shakes, we should get a shake on it because...
Yeah, we should. Andrew's...
All right, well, let's get on...
Do we want to do Andrew's...
with the show.
Book review first?
So here we go. Oh. No, I'm okay. Oh. Dashiell just said it's the fourth quarter.
Oh.
So let me just ask him, what's the score?
All right. Well, we do have a great guest joined by Rose Carlisle. Her new book out right now is called No One Will Know, which I really enjoyed. Now, listen, this is one of those books. It's hard. I'm not going to tell you a little bit. I'm not going to tell you a lot about this book because just like her other book, The Girl in the Mirror, there are lots of twists. There are lots of turns, and in fact, I would personally recommend that you don't even read the description of the book online. It hints at some things that make it, just read the book. Just pick it up, read the book. They give away too much in the inside flap. Listen to this inside flap. Forget about the book's inside flap. I can tell you that the story is about a woman named Eve who was hired on to be a nanny for a couple on their private island. There are servants on this island who act in a peculiar manner, and other strange things begin occurring. And before you know it, Eve finds herself in a world of uncertainty. This is an extremely fast-paced thriller, many twists and turns. I really enjoyed this book all the way from New Zealand. It's always great when you can talk to when we talk to her, we're like, "Hey, you're in the future. What's it like in the future?" Because she's, you know, we were in the afternoon, she was the next day.
Yeah.
So that always freaks me out.
And she's starting spring.
Because I'm an idiot like that. Oh yeah, she didn't seem to like we were trying to come at her with a "Hey," but she didn't seem to.
I thought she seemed into it.
Into the fact that she was in the future.
She indulged us.
Yeah, she did. And when she did enjoy talking to us, so here now, talking about her book, which is entitled No One Will Know. This is Rose Carlin. So, we're still Monday here. It's still Monday.
Monday, and it is the second day of fall. Yeah.
Right.
And I have a hot chocolate.
Oh, yeah. It's still a bit cold here, but not by Colorado standards.
No, that's true.
I shouldn't even say that. It never snows here, so I can never actually say it's cold to someone who's in Colorado.
That's really funny.
You're missing out on a lot, you're missing out on a lot. But the nice thing is we have what is called the Colorado Snow Removal Program, which is also known as the sun. So even though we get a lot of snow, we get the sun comes out the next day and it melts it all away, unless you're up in the mountains. But yeah,
I think it's probably warmer for you in summer than here. I think
it's hot. It's hot here. Yeah. Hot.
Definitely gets hot. Yeah.
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 Where exactly are you?
So I'm in Auckland. So it's the biggest city in New Zealand. Yeah. It's kind of in the north, one of the warmer parts. Yeah.
My parents went to Auckland a little while ago. They absolutely loved it. They were ready to move there. I said, no, you can't. No, I need you close to me. So you can't.
Yeah, it is a lovely place. Now, can you hear me okay? I was wondering if I should be wearing my headphones, but I just haven't connected them.
You sound great.
Sound great.
Oh, that's good. Because there's noise next door, but if you can't hear it, that's great.
I can't hear it. And my name's Laura, and that's Dave.
Yes, I'm Dave.
Oh, yes. Sorry. I know that because I've become a fan of your podcast.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Yeah, just since I was invited on, I went back and I've listened to the last four episodes.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then I went and listened to your interview with Benjamin Stevenson because I met him recently.
All right. That's awesome. Yeah. Oh, that's great. Thanks for listening. That's very nice of you.
Yeah, really nice.
Hopefully, it was palatable for you. Since you listened, I'm going to take all the hard questions out. So only easy questions. Anyway, thanks for coming. And I'm a big fan of you. I, in fact, recommended your other book on the show when it came out, The Girl in the Mirror. Rose, thanks so much for being on the show. As I was,
I'm really excited to be here.
Books are, I love them so much. They're so crazy. You just don't know what I feel like. My mouth is still open from this one. No One Will Know. Loved it. This is a tale of humpback whales, geckos, and castles. Rose, what was it that inspired you to write this book?
A whole lot of things came together, I think, to tell this story. So, I had the idea for a great twist that I felt that nobody would guess.
No, I did not.
And I don't know where that idea came from. I feel like it just fell out of the sky. But also the character of Eve is actually inspired by my own grandmother. So my grandmother was taken into state care as a 13-year-old. So she didn't have a mother of her own. And I've always found it incredible that when she became a mother, she was amazing. She was a great mother and a wonderful grandmother. She inspired me to become a reader, and I feel that that's what led me on the path to writing.
Wow.
So the book is dedicated to her and to my mother, who is her daughter, because I just feel that they both did such an amazing job, and particularly I wanted to write a character who becomes a mother and just doesn't have anyone to teach her, is very isolated and alone.
Well, you definitely captured it. And, I certainly, as a mother yourself, I'm assuming that's something that you drew off of. You have three kids, is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So I did actually, when I write children, I'm sort of drawing on my own children, but an amalgamation of my children. Yeah.
That's really interesting.
They read your books.
My children read a censored version of The Girl in the Mirror.
Oh, okay. I guess I could ask you first how old they are. Yeah.
They did not want to read that scene. You know the scene. They did not.
Oh, I know the scene. Yeah. you gotta be careful. You can't, hey, mom's written another chapter, get them gathered around the campfire.
Yeah,
exactly. So I gave it to them in manuscript form so I could just take those pages out. Okay. They were quite happy to not read it, and I was quite happy for them not to read that.
Oh, that's really funny. That's really funny. You do wonder too, like, you know, sometimes there's a lot of we've talked to them, romance writers out there. And they'll be like, yeah, my grandmother loves my books. It's a little awkward at Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
My mother read, my mother has read my books. So she including those scenes. She's actually a really
I did not raise you to write this kind of smut. She doesn't come at you with that.
Yeah, it was, she was fine with it. Yeah. Yeah.
I think most mothers would be fine. It's the opposite. It's the switching it to the child. The child, children are not okay with that.
That's true.
I don't want to go there. Yeah. No. Although I know that my children's friends have read it. I mean, my children are in their 20s now, so they're old enough. But
they're old enough. Yeah. That's really
still a strange feeling.
Yeah.
No, you don't want them walking around knowing that's what you wrote. I would think, I don't know. Best to leave that unsaid.
Well, now, I hope they understand that it's fiction and they don't think it's some kind of twisted autobiography.
But I feel like you do write some sense of from your life when you're writing about boating. I was reading that is this true? And there's a lot of great sailing scenes in this book. I grew up on the Chesapeake Bay. It brought me back to my days my parents would make me go. I'm not a big sailor, but they'd make me get on the sailboat. I'm like, great, another Saturday. I get to spend it all day on a sailboat and just be back. Sounds like my sister was into it. I was not. So you've sailed your own yacht from Thailand to South Africa?
Wow.
That's right. And think of my children because they were stuck on board for a year.
Oh, so they were with you.
Oh, yes.
So it was the whole family.
Yeah, when people hear that, they tend to imagine that we were at sea for a year. But of course,
that picture.
The longest we were at sea, I think, was 6 days. So, most of the time, we were visiting the countries along the way, which
are so
the most interesting and diverse countries in the world. You know, every time you sailed into a different port, even if it had only been a couple of days' sail, it was a different world. So, we went places like the Maldives, which are feel like walking on the moon, you know, like the whole land is just tiny little specks in the middle of the ocean.
Wow. Did you have any crazy sea creature birding experiences when you were out there? Anything different?
Oh, yes, we did. So that's why I've written some of those.
Oh, yeah.
The novel, because I felt that even though I'm writing a thriller and a lot of the time readers are on the edge of their seat and, you know, they're worried for my heroine and the stakes are high, I also like to sweep them into a beautiful world. Yeah. So I kind of got these two opposite things going at once. Is this your dream or is this your nightmare? So, you know, Eve is swept away to a beautiful private island off the coast of Tasmania, and you know the place she's living is called Paradise Bay. It's beautiful. There are yachts, and she has some beautiful encounters with wildlife. So especially, you know, she sees albatrosses soaring in the sky above her. There are these beautiful geckos scuttling around, and of course she has the close encounter with the she actually has two encounters with whales.
Two of them,
And that is based on, I remember actually the first time that I saw dolphins that had were lit up by phosphorescence. So I was sailing.
Oh, wow.
I was quite young, and I was quite honored when it was an overnight sail when he said, okay, I'm going to bed now. You've got this. So I was sailing through the night for the first time in my life, and, you know, very carefully keeping out a watch so that I didn't crash his yacht into somebody else. And suddenly the water was full of dolphins, and I could see their shapes absolutely clearly because they were outlined in gold, and they actually glow in the dark.
Wow.
And they love to jump over the bow wave, so they stayed with the yacht for quite a while, and it just felt so magical. I wanted to put that in the book, but I remember when I went to work after that weekend and I was just gushing about what a fantastic experience I'd had, a workmate said, "You're obviously lying." And I could see that from his point of view. It just sounded like the kind of story that a child would make up. You know, I saw dolphins and they were glow in the dark.
It sounds like maybe you had taken something.
Yeah, maybe somebody dosed you with something also.
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly, it's the best high of all. It's just those encounters with dolphins, whales, sharks as well, you know, as long as they're not the scary someone.
Yeah.
Have you seen a shark in the wild?
Yeah. So actually, the first, I mean, we'd seen them when we were on our yacht, but the first time that someone in my family was swimming with a shark was my 10-year-old daughter.
Oh.
So we were in the Maldives, as I mentioned earlier, and I stayed in the dinghy while the others were snorkeling.
Mm-hmm.
Always need someone to stay in the dinghy in case someone gets taken off by the current. Yeah. And she suddenly leapt back in the dinghy and said, "I saw a shark." And I said, "Oh, it's okay, sweetie. You know, you're in the boat now. You'll be fine. We'll just get your brothers." And she said, "No, no, it's a white-tipped reef shark," and jumped back in the water.
Well, she knew it wasn't one of the big guys she had to worry about.
Wow.
So she knew that white-tipped reef sharks are safe, which was likely because we were inside the reef where you don't get the big, dangerous sharks.
Wow. But
I hadn't even taught her that. I didn't know how she knew that. She'd learned her sharks.
Wow.
So my daughter, very prepared, so that if she saw a shark, she would immediately know whether she needed to get out of the water or she could safely stay in the water.
Wow.
She just jumped in the dinghy to tell me, let me know the exciting news.
Wow. That speaks to her as a person, though. Because I could still know all of the sharks. And at that age, I would have hopped back into that boat so fast and I would not have gone back down.
But I thought, I mean, the shark was as long as her.
Big. They're big. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have humpback whales, you know, in this book too. Have you had any experience with humpback whales?
Yeah. So when we sailed down the Mozambique Channel between Madagascar and mainland Africa, there are just a lot of humpback whales.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In fact, I remember there were so many that, and it's such a fast sail that I was really looking out for them, making sure we didn't get too close and actually, you know, hit one. But they know exactly where they are. So
wow, that's so cool. Did you guys go to Madagascar at all?
Yes, we did.
Oh, yeah, I heard amazing things. Was it amazing? Like, you know, you always hear like with the animals and biology. Wow.
It was just another world.
Wow.
I mean, the people in Madagascar still sail boats because they don't have motors, you know, like they're not part of the oil economy. They don't have petrol. They don't have oil. They are sailing their boats that you would have thought might have come from Roman times up and down the coast.
Wow.
And really living off the land. I've never seen so much ripped muscle in my life. I think if you live off the land, so strong and healthy because they're just living, you know, lived for thousands of years. It's really unique and interesting culture. And of course, all of the interesting wildlife there as well, lemurs.
Yeah, the lemurs. Yeah. Interesting.
I've seen the movie, so, you know, I feel like
I know. You got to move it. I know.
That's right. We just finished, I'm a high school theater teacher. We just finished a production of Urinetown here at the school. We had a kid wear one of those fake pregnant bellies that you talk about in your book that come into play in your book. Not as fancy, not a silicone base, but I'm wondering if you, did you try one out for size or did you, one off there?
I have not tried one on for size, although, so my book launch is next week. And for my last book launch, my sister and I dressed as the twins, Iris and Summer. I mean, we're not twins, but we dressed in character.
Oh, that's awesome.
So we have talked about, do we want to or do we not want to dress with fake pregnancy bellies.
Oh, that's really funny. Yeah, I think that
Let's make that happen. We need to. Okay.
Yeah, they're actually really expensive. The ones that I researched.
Now, as I was saying, this book has so many. I still got a little. I don't know if you can tell. My neck kind of hurts a little bit from the whiplash that I got from reading this book. I assume this is not the kind of book you just wing it as you go. Did you have like a pretty heavily outlined idea for where this one was going to go? How long did that outline take you to write?
Yeah, I write really detailed outlines. So I actually write a chapter by chapter outline, which includes the first sentence and last sentence of each chapter, as well as maybe a paragraph about what the chapter is going to cover. But that does change because, you know, sometimes the chapter just gets too long and you realize, oh, this is two chapters, or new ideas come in. So I plan out really carefully, but that doesn't guarantee that there won't be a lot of revising. And actually the epilogue, I really struggled with the epilogue. It took me a long time. So I'm not going to give any spoilers, but epilogue is from a different character's point of view who we haven't heard from before. Yeah. And I had actually sold the book to my editor and she was working with me and she said, I think the epilogue isn't working. And one day I was out swimming and it suddenly struck me, I just need to write that epilogue from a different point of view. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, oh, what if there was actually like a different version of events that happened on that key night, you know, the night that I'm talking about. I thought, I was so excited when I thought of it that I had to swim back to land furiously as and rush home and just sat down and wrote this whole new epilogue in one go. And I knew I finally had the perfect ending sentence as well.
Yeah, that's a good one. Did you think about writing it from the humpback whale's point of view?
Well, I have read a book from the octopus's point of view. So,
yes, that's a good one. What is that one called?
Remarkably Bright Creature.
Remarkably Bright Creature. Oh, that is a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Next one, or the one after you finish, where I'm sure you got one probably in the works right now. Just maybe throw it on your notepad.
I'll wait.
And you can.
It's funny. I did actually think once about writing a whole book, like a children's book from the whale's point of view.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
You can use the humpback whale songs, you know, as a digital download to go along with it.
Oh, yeah. Do you know that humpback whale songs were like a number one hit in 1972?
No.
You would not think that, right? A whole record just of humpback whale songs was put on the market. You would think that would sell maybe, you know, 2,000 copies.
Yeah.
It was a number one hit.
That is so odd.
I remember, I feel like when I was a kid, it came in like a National Geographic magazine that my parents had
sold,
and it was like a record.
Like a 45.
But you could listen to the sounds. And I remember my parents would listen to it. I'd be like,
that's interesting.
What's going on here? Yeah, it's strange. These are whales. Sit down. This is nature. Listen to this.
I was kind of curious about your grandmother. I don't know a whole lot about my grandmother, like bits and pieces and stuff from, you know, my mom and maybe your sisters. Did you, were you able to talk to your grandmother? Did you talk to your mom about her? How growing up, were you close with her growing up?
I always felt really close with her growing up. Mm. Although, I mean, she had 16 grandchildren including some step grandchildren. And so, and she was a little bit older when she had my mother, so she wasn't a really hands-on grandmother, but I really felt close to her and my grandfather. And I feel like there's a literature gene in our family, you know, and it feels like it comes from her. So she got accepted into high school at the age of 12. I mean, back in 1920, you had to be accepted into high school. It wasn't guaranteed that you would go. Yeah, you had to pass the entrance exams. But she wrote an essay, and her teachers were so impressed with it that they sent it to the local newspaper and it was published. And she was told that she didn't have to sit the exams because this essay had proven her ability.
Wow. But
tragically, that was when she never went because her so she came home from school one day and her mother wasn't there, and there was a man there who her mother called her uncle, but she knew he wasn't really her uncle. He was her mother's boyfriend. So her mother was unmarried and had all these boyfriends and always said, this is your uncle.
Okay.
And he was quite threatening towards her, and she turned around and fled out of the house. And she told me that she remembered thinking she could just go to the next door neighbors, or she could run across the road to the policeman's house. And she knew that if she went to the policeman, she might never go home again.
Yeah.
And that was what she chose.
Wow. So
she was taken into state care.
Hmm.
But at that age in 1920, it was considered that you were old enough to work. So she was sent to live with a wealthy couple on their high country farm. And not as their foster child, she was their maid. That was the end of her education. And yet she spent her whole life, you know, reading books, reading classics. And she gave me books to read that really opened my eyes to the world of literature. So, yeah, awesome. I was just so delighted to be able to dedicate my book to her, because I feel like her spirit is in there with Eve. And that's why my main character is called Eve, because Eve is like the first mother. So it's
the
mother who
didn't get taught how to be a mother, has to figure it all out from scratch, and yet somehow she does it.
Wow, that's interesting. And, you know, in the book, your Eve suffers from migraines. Did you do research on migraines from the book? Do you suffer? Anyone in your family suffer from migraines?
Oh, yeah. So a really close family member of mine. Yeah. And she was quite touched that migraines were in the book. She feels that no one ever writes about them or talks about them, even though there are millions of people.
It's pretty common. Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Now, I did love your description. Now you talk about you're writing about this beautiful place, and the world you created is a place where I want to go. And you're talking about there's a lighthouse in there, and you make a great point that I never thought about. But these lighthouses have to be built on some pretty rugged, rocky landscape. Who are these heroes who actually have to build? You ever think about who's out there building them? But it's got to be really hard to build these lighthouses. Did you visit a lot? I'm sure you've been to many lighthouses over the years, but did you go and visit one in particular you were thinking about as you wrote this one?
Oh, yes, I did. I actually went to Tasmania.
Make sure
you did. Okay, great.
You know, to research the novel and make sure that I was describing the landscape well. And although Breaksea Island is a fictional island, it's kind of based on Bruny Island off the coast of Tasmania. So I went to Bruny Island Lighthouse, which was really magical experience. It's very eerie and lonely and isolated, which is exactly the vibe that I was looking for this book. Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
You nailed it. Absolutely. What did, you know, since I do have you here, what did inspire that Girl in the Mirror book? That was another crazy one. What where did that one come from? From you and your sister? So you're not identical.
Yeah, it was really crazy. She and I were having lunch and she said, oh, I've been thinking about writing a book about twins. And I said, oh, me too. I want to write a book about twins too. She said, oh, and of course this has to happen. And I said, yeah, and then this could happen. And it was like over the course of lunch, we plotted out the whole book.
Wow.
And then my aunt who was there said, oh, so which of you girls is going to write this book? And I had this awful feeling of, oh, my sister doesn't want to write it. And she turned to me and said, Rose, you write it and I'll help you.
Oh, that's great.
I was so excited that I went home and I almost started writing straight away. I just couldn't think about anything else.
Wow.
So that, again, it just felt like magic that this idea just came to us together, and we almost had the whole thing plotted out right away.
That is nuts. Yeah.
I remember I was listening to that book and I had my daughter in the car and I was getting like towards the end and I literally made her sit there and listen, like, even though I was like 90% not outside, I'm upset. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, you don't usually listen to music at all. I was like, I have got to finish this book. I'm sorry. You don't know, you're not going to know what's going on. But she got hooked into it too, and then she read it. So, you know, it worked out. It worked out well.
Well, that was okay. I know exactly what book.
You remember
that?
Yeah.
But I know you both read it. She's like, I gotta read this book. I heard the last bit.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I can imagine if you had just read the ending, you wouldn't really know what was going on. So then you could still read the book.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. She was able to go back and then dip in from the beginning without realizing, but. All right, Rose, it is now time for our segment we call Quick Six. These are six quick questions, which we find out just a little bit more about you. Here we go. What is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
Well, I watch a lot of New Zealand TV, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the last American show that I watched and really enjoyed was an oldie but a goodie. So I rewatched Mad Men.
Yeah, that's a good one. Loved it. We just recently watched the New Zealand version of The Traitors. Have you seen this show, The Traitors? You ever seen it's it's a reality show. You've got
I will write that down.
Check it out.
Yeah,
I will check that one out.
Is that Dave? Is that with the James Bond kind of looking host, the good looking host?
That was the Australian one.
Oh, okay.
We started to dip into the New Zealand one.
Okay. I might not be remembering. That's exciting. What fictional world or place would you like to visit?
I'm sure everybody says this, but Narnia, right?
Who doesn't want to go to Narnia?
I read those books when I was six. And so I was young enough that I actually checked wardrobes for a long time after that. You know, I'd be at someone's house and I would see a wardrobe in the spare room, just have to creep in.
You gotta, you don't know.
No.
You don't know. There could be snow back there.
Yeah.
You're not sure. Yeah, that's the best. Genius.
Also Middle Earth and
Middle Earth is really popular. I would go to Narnia before Middle Earth, but that's just me.
Well, you know, I'm from New Zealand, so I'm basically from Middle Earth.
You already live there. You don't need to go. How about this? Give us one of your favorite movies of all time.
That's a hard one because I'm a real cinephile. I really love classics. I love Bergman films. I love Hitchcock films.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say Paris, Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wim Wenders. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And I just love that. I'm not going to spoil it for anyone, but I love the scene at the end with Nastasia Kinski twirling in the green dress. It's just, can't watch that without crying. Yeah.
I love his films. Yeah, he's one of my favorites. How about a favorite book of yours? I know.
It's the hardest one of all.
That's the tough one.
Like one that's on your mind recently.
Yeah, Anna Karenina, I think.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I really love 19th century writing, and I'm going through a phase of reading a whole lot of Russian literature at the moment. So,
You must be really in a happy place.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's delightful skipping down the lane listening.
Loving life.
How about this, Rose? Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
Oh, yes. So I'm living next door to a construction site. And so this is a bit of a hack, right? Because when I sing karaoke, I want everyone to sing along.
Yes.
So there's a New Zealand song called Why Does Love Do This to Me?
Okay.
And I know that the strong men next door, you know, they're playing the commercial radio all day, but when that song comes on, they are all singing along.
So
I figure if I'm going to be singing karaoke, I want everyone singing along, and that's my guarantee that it will.
I got to listen to that. After we're done, I'll listen to it. That's good.
Yeah.
Last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
I just finished Malice by Keigo Higashino, which is actually the second time I've read it.
Oh, wow.
So it's a Japanese thriller. I didn't realize until recently that it's number 4 in a series, but I don't think it's one of those things where you just wouldn't need to. I've never read the other ones. It's definitely, I think it's his most highly rated. And what I love about it is it's around a manuscript. And so as an author, you know, you really get hooked into any of those books that are about manuscripts and the evil things that people can do over their desire for fame as an author. It's a little bit like Yellowface in that way. Different, but some of the same themes.
Cool. Good rec.
Very good. Well, Rose, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day. Absolutely love the book. No One Will Know. My God, my head is still spinning from it. And really just good luck with the new book.
Well, thank you so much. It's been really lovely to talk to you both. Yeah.
Thanks for your time. Happy spring.
Yeah, thank you. Happy fall.
That's right. All right. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The Inside Fly. All right, there you go. That is Rose Carlisle. And check out that book, No One Will Know. And before we go on with the show, Andrew, score update, what do you got?
No score yet.
Okay. Okay, well, breaking news whenever it feels like breaking, let us know. But for now, let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
Let's start with
Laura Medicus.
Laura, what do you got for us this week?
I have a fantastic book, and it is called The Comfort of Crows, A Backyard Year by Margaret Rinkle. So this book hit me, I know, at just the perfect time in my life, and I just can't say enough good about this book. It's told through 52 essays, 26 mini essays, that starts in January, the first day of January. And it goes through the seasons all the way back to winter again.
Oh, wow.
So this is a book about change. So Margaret shares her thoughts and reflections on, birds and other small animals in her suburban backyard, which you're like, yawn, why would I want to read that?
Right.
But it is so much more than that. She is an amazing writer. So it's very personal. The essays are very personal, but I also found it very relatable. So she and her husband are fairly new empty nesters, Dave, like us.
Sounds
they
familiar.
Are in late midlife, and she is adjusting. She's adjusting to not being, an active parent anymore, not having a kid at home. She's adjusting to changes in her neighborhood as the old small homes are getting bulldozed for bigger, newer, better homes. Mm-hmm. We've all seen that happen. It's happened in our neighborhood.
Yep.
That's for sure. And she's noticing the environmental changes that are occurring every single season, with climate change.
Right.
So you can dip into this book and read an essay or two. They're all interrelated. I recommend reading it chronologically, but, what I like to do with nonfiction is have a fiction book going on the side.
Yeah, right.
And then every once in a while, read my
essays.
Yeah. And this is a perfect book for that. So if you're into pollinator gardening, which I'm really into.
I know Andrew's big into the pollinator gardening. Economics and pollinator gardening.
I know. I'm saying this is a niche book. So let me tell you.
All right.
Let me tell you.
Okay, niche. Okay.
Andrew's not going to pick this up and finding as meaningful as I particularly did. So if you're into pollinator garden, natural gardening, birding, or if you're someone experiencing some midlife or late midlife change, highly, highly recommend this.
Okay.
Moments of this book really caught me emotionally off guard. Also, she has that ability as a writer. It's just beautifully written. It's very thoughtful. I am not a rereader of books. I don't like to reread books in general. This book, I think.
In fact, you'll just throw a book away once you
burn it.
Into the backyard campfire.
Burn it.
Yeah.
But I think with this book, I'm going to get the audiobook of it.
Whoa, really?
It is an absolutely stunning book. And I've heard if you get the paper book, which I read it on my Kindle because that's the way I am, that her brother did beautiful illustrations throughout
the
book.
This is why you always got to go paper.
That's true. So it's called The Comfort of Crows, A Backyard Year by Margaret Rinkle.
Mm. All right. Sounds great.
It's awesome.
And my book this week.
Dave Medicus.
When we usher in chaos, just know that we did a smile.
So I've got for you, and you'll pick up on this theme with my audio book as well. I have two books. With this book and my audiobook of the week, that would make amazing, fantastic movies. I'm going to start with my pick for the week, which is Worst Case Scenario by T.J. Newman. Now, I love this author. Laura, I know you love this author as well.
Absolutely.
Former flight attendant turned novelist. First book, a massive success, all about a pilot who has to...
So good.
Who is threatened to, with who has to crash a plane if he wants to keep his family alive. This book came about, and she's got a nice little foreword to the book. She would go around and ask pilots what their biggest fear was.
Oh.
And the
I don't know if I want to know.
No, why would you do something like that? The one response that she got that stuck with her and that inspired this book.
Yes, I almost have chills. What is it?
Yeah, it's going to give you chills. It's a pilot who said it's crashing a plane into a nuclear reactor.
Hmm. Oh.
Something that I guess in after 9/11, after 9/11, they told us, well, nothing can happen to the nuclear reactor. There's all kinds of turn off valves and safety measures. Spoiler, there's not. There's not. So if a plane goes into a nuclear reactor, say goodnight.
That's terrifying.
Johnny.
So I question that. Yeah. No, the reason being is, in the U.S., at least, they have these huge concrete silos around the reactors.
They do in other places, too.
Right? And the thing is, the mechanics of the reactor...
Andrew, apparently, since we've come inside, have you noticed he's forgotten to learn how to speak into the microphone?
So well, it's because I'm not reclining on the floral
exactly.
settee.
I know, exactly. You're not resting comfortably.
I have to retrain myself
to sit
at the table.
Yes, yeah. It's winter time.
But anyways, so the mechanics of the nuclear power plant aren't right next to the silo. Mm-hmm. They're down inside the silo. So this silo is designed, so it would, and I don't know how strong those barriers are, but they're round. And things that are round like that are much stronger.
Right.
So I wonder, I don't know.
This, so what happens here is all has to do with a pool. Well, it sounds delightful to take a dip in a pool, but there are pools that cool these rods, and these pools are very, very deep. Mm. And it has to do with the fact there's a breach in the retaining wall when the I think it was the wing that hits the plant. Mm. And the problem is the water, if the water gets to a certain level, then the radiation, I kind of glance over this. People can really dig into the science aspect of it. I'm more of the story aspect part of it myself. But that's what the great thing about this book. It's got both going for you. And the book starts out with a bang when a pilot suffers a heart attack while he's flying a plane, and this commercial aircraft full of passengers crashes into a small town in Minnesota. And those opening scenes are just absolutely spectacular. She describes the bits and pieces of this plane landing in different locations and who's there to witness it. And, of course, a bit of the plane crashes into the nuclear power plant, and that's when all hell breaks loose. It's just like a movie because of the timing of it. And what she does in each chapter, she counts down to when the meltdown is going to occur. Mm. And if they don't get these rods secure, they don't get the water secure, that's when the meltdown is going to occur.
Yeah. So I think it's a great plot. Like, without a doubt, I think it's a great plot.
Yeah. Oh, good,
even if it's only a tiny sliver of plausibility, right? It's a great plot. But of course, I'm reading science fiction. I'm doing science fiction and fantasy, which it's not like any of that stuff is plausible at all.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, well, I think TJ, I do believe she did a lot of research, and I believed that this is very plausible the way that she wrote it. And I feel like if you did read it, you would agree with me, because there is a lot to the science there. And the fact that this nuclear power plant is not too far away from the Mississippi River, the way she describes it is that everybody along the Mississippi River is imperiled and would have to relocate. And this is a tragedy that could affect up to a third of the country. Now, I just kept seeing this as a movie in my head. It's very cinematic. You've got characters you root for, like the no-nonsense tough woman overseeing the operation, the local firefighter. He's a guy who's recently widowed and has a young son. Of course, the president gets involved. Each chapter starts out with this countdown to describing how much long we have to go until disaster strikes. There are sacrifices that has to be made. Andrew is shaking his head at me. I love this book. And I would challenge you to read it. I think you would love it as well. He really gets the adrenaline flowing. The juices get going. The heart rate spikes. Just jump into the story and let TJ take it from you.
So Siskel, I think I'm waiting for the movie on this one.
All right. We'll see. I think
I'll read it. I have it on my library hold.
Yeah. All of her books, I think, would make great
movies. Yeah, I like
so
her books.
It's Worst Case Scenario by TJ Newman.
Yeah. And I think it's a great plot. Like, without a doubt,
it is a great plot. Yeah. All right. He's going to hold
endorsement from Andrew.
All right. So let's get to Andrew's book.
How's the football game?
So Andrew showed up without a yellow. The first time in 5 years I've seen him without.
He's been busy, Dave.
A yellow legal pad with his review written on it.
So my book is called The Artifact by David Collins. Hmm. This has a 4.7 on Goodreads.
Wow. I think my Comfort of Crows was 4.5, which is really amazing for nonfiction.
Wow, that's incredible.
I'm out there looking for quality.
I got changed.
That's right. Yeah.
The Artifact, David Collins.
Yeah. And what did I pay for this book?
Zero. Yeah. Well, it's your Kindle Unlimited subscription.
That's right, my Kindle Unlimited. So the story of this book, it is a, I would say it is a bootstrap genre. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's interesting, like, how big AI is these days.
Oh, man.
Right?
I just went to a meeting about it today.
Yeah.
I'm reading a book right now that it's a literary book and it's about AI.
And and I would say, like, science fiction has talked about AI for a long time.
Yeah. HAL, too. In the 2010 Space Odyssey, right?
HAL, I mean, Isaac Asimov, I mean, you name it. Going back just, 50 years or more, they've talked about AI. But this book has AI, too. So what happens in here is there's three college students who are getting ready to graduate. They are weeks away from graduating, you know? And I think we all remember those days when we're getting ready to graduate. Do we have a job lined up? Don't we have a job lined up?
Are we going to go to grad school?
Yeah. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
Right? attending some last parties, a couple last exams.
Lucky. Yeah.
So Benjamin, Mark, and Chloe, they are all set to graduate college. Now Ben is a novelist. And he was looking, and I guess he writes science fiction. And so he was looking for something to inspire the artwork, for one of his books. And so he found this artifact on eBay.
What a great premise.
Right?
I'm in.
Yeah.
And so I'm in.
He's like, maybe it cost me $70 plus shipping, plus $300 shipping. Uh-huh. But
$300 for sure.
I'm kidding, but that's the way it goes. Oh, so my son Peter. Hey, Dad, I bought an animatronic for $30 and $200 shipping, Dad.
Whoa.
I'm like, great, Peter. Great. Oh. What a bargain. So anyways.
I could have bought you four meals at Five Guys.
So he decides to
one
get
clarinet.
It. Now he gets it.
Yeah, did we get an update on the clarinets, by the way?
Not this
They're
week.
Being repaired. Okay. They're being repaired.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways. So he gets this thing, and it smells like cow manure because basically it's been pulled out of somebody's field in the Midwest.
Okay.
And so he cleans this thing up, and then what does he do after he cleans it up? He sets it on his desk, and he just happens to set it on top of a wireless charger.
Oh.
Right? Mm. And so the next thing he knows, he has an artificial intelligence talking to him.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Okay.
Now, what is this? What is this device? Is it a communications device? Why, yes, it is.
Hmm.
And so this device has been laying around, and I think it's for nearly 3,000 years.
Hmm.
And so what happened is a spaceship basically crashed on the moon. And it has been on the moon for almost 3,000 years. All its crew died. And there was an AI in charge of the ship. And the AI survived. Now, of course, the AI should have self-destructed because the AI's protocol said if there's nobody left alive, you self-destruct. But the AI, I guess, had a sense of preservation. And he decided not to basically self-destruct.
Hmm.
Right? And so maybe that's, one of the first things. Maybe with AI, the sense of preservation is what it takes. So this AI has preservation. So what does he do? While he's sitting around for 3,000 years, he decides to improve himself. He increases his processing power. He completely modifies the spaceship, because what else does he have to do? And he's watching, like, humanity grow and come along. I mean, imagine like watching us for the last 3,000 years. Yeah. He's like, man, things were really boring until humanity developed radios.
Oh, that's funny.
Right. And then we could start monitoring things
easier
and monitoring internet. So anyways, so these college almost graduates find this device. They communicate with the spaceship. And so what do they end up doing? The spaceship says, hey, let's go exploring. Let's, you know, you're going to graduate. What are you going to do this summer? Let's take a trip through the galaxy. Right. And so that's, you know, that's basically the premise of the book. Now,
All right. Now,
of course, the spaceship basically makes it clear I'm trying to like hide myself, because if the race that actually built me sees me, they'll want to destroy me. And we have to hide the fact that I'm a super smart AI, because, you know, civilization doesn't want, they don't want AIs. They're afraid of AIs.
Hmm.
Now, is this spaceship and this crew of humans, are they smarter and better than these civilizations that have lived with technology for thousands of years?
Hmm.
Why, yes, they are.
Do they
kick some galactic ass?
Wow.
Why wouldn't they?
This sounds like a fun TV show miniseries.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Kind of thing.
I could see it, especially, I mean.
Is there humor in it?
There's humor in the book. But I could see where they could really, like, you know, and it's fun when a book like this doesn't take itself too seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but I could see, you know, where they're like, they could turn it in, especially if they did like a little bit more, maybe not quite Spaceballs. I wouldn't go full
Spaceballs. Yeah.
But a little funnier.
But a little funnier.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
You know, like a Reno 911 type of.
Oh,
maybe,
I get it.
Maybe that's too far. But the book is, and I read the book. Unfortunately, the second book in the series is not out yet.
Oh, man.
You know? But the book is called The Artifact by David Collins.
Okay.
So pick it up for your...
That sounds great.
Your fall break.
Very good. And that's recommended by...
Andrew Dow.
Which brings us to the audiobook of the week. And my pick this week is called The Ascent by Adam Plantinga, narrated by Charles Halford and Christine Lakin. So just like, and this one is another, so just like my book, my pick this week, which was Worst Case Scenario by T.J. Newman, this is another book that would make a hell of a movie, an exciting thrill ride starring two main players. One is a cop named Kurt, who after losing his wife to cancer, becomes hell-bent on exacting revenge and retribution on every miscreant he meets, which leads to him being forced to retire from the Detroit Police Department. And a few weeks later, he ends up attacking a man. He discovers assaulting a woman. Turns out this man has family in the police department, and this leads to Kurt being unfairly arrested. And he's taken to a high-security prison while he waits to see a judge. Meanwhile, the governor's daughter, for a grad class she's taken a tour of this very same prison. Suddenly, the unimaginable occurs. There is a security system malfunction, and we have a clock starts ticking down until all the doors inside this prison will be unlocked, releasing all the prisoners. And it is up to Kurt to help the governor's daughter and a small team of personnel to ascend their way through the prison and get out before everyone.
You have read a lot of clock ticking books.
I know, it's crazy.
It's funny.
Yeah, before everyone is released. And of course, along the way, he does come up against some hardened criminals. So there's lots of action to it. I was picturing a young Liam. It's like we played last week.
I will look for you.
There you go. A young Liam Neeson.
I will find you.
As the cop in this one. Maybe
and
a,
I will kill you.
Maybe a Bruce Willis type.
Here's
lots
one
of
thing
action.
That I've noticed.
Yes.
Okay. As we get older, our references for movie stars.
That's why I got to say a young Liam Neeson.
I know,
Liam
it stays the same.
Mm. It does.
I have trouble,
that's
even
true.
Though I feel like we're fairly current.
Like, who's a movie star now?
I don't know. I don't know. My go-to is always Brad Pitt, who's like 50-something years old.
Right.
You sure he's not 60 now?
He might be 60.
He might be.
And I think you're right. I think he's 60.
I don't know. The guy, the young kid, Timothy Chalamet.
Oh, Chalamet. How about that? Timothy Chalamet.
Timothy Chalamet.
He's a certain type of look, though. He's not going to be in these Liam Neeson.
No, he wouldn't be this. Like, who would be a guy playing the determined cop?
It's not Ryan Gosling. Ryan Gosling's older now, too.
He's another old one. Ryan Reynolds.
Not him.
No, he's getting old.
He's also very famous. I'm talking like we don't know anymore.
We don't know. I don't know.
We used to know.
Do we have? I don't think we don't have movie stars anymore.
No, we do. We do.
Do we? We probably
do.
We do. We just can't think of them.
I don't think it's not going to be Channing Tatum.
No.
No, he's old too.
He's old now too. Yeah,
Brad Pitt is 60 years old.
Who's Brad Pitt? Who's Brad Pitt?
Brad Pitt.
Travis
is 60 years old.
Travis Tritt's brother.
Travis Tritt. Anyway, let's take a listen to a clip.
We all get old.
This is The Ascent by Adam Plantinga.
The man leading the tour had introduced himself as Assistant Warden Polaire. He was well over 6 feet tall and gangly, with dishwater gray hair. He wore an off-brand brown suit that made Julie think of a budget undertaker. It was offset by a thick, jeweled college or fraternity ring that struck her as ostentatious given the surroundings. He seemed in a hurry. Maybe his haste was due to trying to get out early for the holiday weekend. Or maybe it was because there were things in the prison he didn't want Julie to see. Or some combination of both. Julie didn't much care. She had a passing curiosity about the inner workings of a large state pen, but corrections was her least favorite grad class, and mostly she wanted to get this over with too.
Audiobook of the week. All right, there you go. That is your audiobook of the week, and that'll do it for us this week. Thank you so much to Rose Carlisle for hopping on the show. Check out her book, No One Will Know. And we appreciate you tuning in. Remember when Andrew used to do a quote at the end of every show?
Yeah, I remember
because
he went to his phone. It was like he was looking
back.
Because he would always be furiously looking for a quote. Anyway, my name is Dave Medicus. See you next week.
Adios.
Excelsior.
I kiss every walker.